This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Governor Tony Evers is suing Republicans in the state legislature over their decision to block pay raises for UW system employees until diversity initiatives on campuses are stopped, and the decision to block some conservation projects proposed under the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. Here's Governor Evers.
When the Republicans decided that 35,000 people that work for the UW system shouldn't get a raise without having any legislation that gives them that authority, that's just bullshit.
Evers argues that because these decisions were made in committees rather than through a full legislative vote, lawmakers are violating the state constitution's rules on separation of powers. The governor's office is requesting that the suit go directly to the state Supreme Court, according to a statement that's due, quote, to its significant statewide importance, as well as the exigent harms caused by Republicans' unconstitutional obstruction. We're talking about Governor Evers' lawsuit against Republican lawmakers, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think state lawmakers, Republicans in particular in the legislature, are overreaching their powers? What are your thoughts on pay raises being blocked for UW system employees until diversity initiatives on campuses are stopped? Do these actions rise to obstruction of government function since they were decided in committees? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mordecai Lee is a professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Legislature. Mordecai, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Glad to be here.
Good to have you back. Now, how common is it for the governor of Wisconsin to sue the legislature of Wisconsin?
You know, this is pretty unusual and pretty odd. And what I'm hearing is that we in Wisconsin have gotten so partisan and deeply rooted in our partisan identity that, you know, some people who are Republican will immediately say, oh, this is dumb. And some people who are Democrats will say, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm hoping that over the next half hour, we can talk about this in a nonpartisan way based on the principles at hand of what would generically be called a legislative veto.
Let's talk about that. Before we get into the particulars, it seems like this is a core issue, this idea, and correct me if I'm summing this up wrong, Mordecai, but legislation passed that grants the legislature, through some of its committees, power to do some of the job that's usually done by the executive branch. It seems like that's the core of this separation of powers dispute. Now, before we get into the dispute itself, it's been a couple sessions since you were actually in the legislature yourself, Mordecai. But back in the day, was this a common practice that a law would be created and then a committee in the legislature would be part of overseeing the execution of that law?
Well, back in the day, it was very limited. There was the committee, it's called by its abbreviation, JOCR. Mm-hmm. And a JOCR was a joint committee that had final approval for pay raises. And so that's no different from what we're talking about today in terms of UW employees. There was the JCRAR, Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. That committee could suspend an administrative rule that was already in effect without going to the full legislature. But that was about it in those days. It's become much more common since we've had a situation of a legislature dominated by one party and a governor's office dominated by the other party.
Given that there's that precedent, though, could a court look at this and say, well, you've been doing this in one way or another for a lot of years. We've got a longstanding precedent, so that's okay. That's how Wisconsin works.
You know, I think the precedents are relatively limited. In other words, a court could say, okay, you've done pay raises this way, you know, since time immemorial. Although you've never done it in a way that only gave it to some state employees and not to other state employees. So that's a line of argumentation. JCRAR, in terms of suspending an existing administrative rule, was relatively unusual in those days. And it certainly didn't have to do with preventing a rule from going into effect. So it's possible that you could have a judicial decision that says, what is remains is, but all this other new stuff we're going to look much more closely at.
So let's look at that phrase you brought up earlier, legislative veto. Could you talk about what you mean by that and what it means for us?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to what was that ABC TV show? I think it was Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the episodes was called I'm Just a Bill. And frankly, that was a much better explanation of how a bill becomes a law than any 50-minute lecture by a professor. I'm guessing that a lot of your listeners might remember it, or even some people might remember the basics of how a bill becomes a law back from high school civics. But the essential principle that all of us really take for granted and don't think about much is that in our constitutional system, the legislature passes bills, and then a governor can either decide to sign it or veto it. In other words, the enacting something belongs to the legislature and vetoing it belongs to the chief executive. What a legislative veto does is it turns the process upside down, where a governor or a president proposes something and then the legislature vetoes it. It might veto it through a one committee. It might veto it through a one house vote or even a two house vote. But it turns the situation backwards. And so I think that the state Supreme Court is going to be interested in looking at this in principle, and in part because the U.S. Supreme Court made a relatively similar decision back in 1983, and that might end up being a pretty prevailing precedent.
Talking to Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, looking at Governor Evers' lawsuit against the Republican-led state legislature over using committees to block certain laws from coming into full effect. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Okay, let's dig into the particular issues being brought up in this lawsuit. Now, they've got some of the general stuff in there, Mordecai. First of all, Evers suing over, you mentioned the Joint Committee on Employee Relations, Joker. They approved this pay raise that had been passed in the state budget, 6% pay raise for all state employees, except for those in the UW system. Disclaimer, everybody at WPR is under the UW system. Anyhow, can you talk a little bit about that dispute?
Here's a situation where the ideological politics of the legislature versus a Democratic governor are really clashing. If you peel back just a layer or two, the logic of the linkage becomes clear. But I think like you, Rob, I should put in the disclaimer that as Professor Emeritus, I'm no longer an employee of the university, and therefore I don't have any skin in the game. I'm not affected by this. But here you've got Speaker Voss, a very powerful speaker, a Republican speaker, who says that he's against the university having diversity activities, equity activities, and he wants the legislature to, he wants the university to abolish those offices. And he's using this as a kind of leverage. He's saying, I won't permit Joker to give all university employees the pay raise we have approved for other state employees until UW abolishes its, what they're called DEI, its diversity and inclusiveness offices. And the president of the university has been very clear that this does not seem fair and that there seems, he also is willing to defend DEI at UW as being reasonable. And so now we're at loggerheads. So you've got the speaker looking for leverage, and this is one of them.
Then the other issue, not quite as high profile, it's something we've talked about on the show over the last year or so, the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. This is the Joint Finance Committee gets to review some of these projects, has blocked some, according to the petition from the Attorney General here, without providing explanation for why they were blocked. Pelican River Forest Conservation, Cedar Gorge Clay Bluffs were a couple of those. I don't know if this is the headline part of this story, Mordecai, but what do you think about that part of the suit?
Well, there are probably two factors here. One of them is the principle of a committee making a decision, a committee exercising a veto, a little bit parallel to when we talked about Joker. The other one is the committee exercising the veto based on an anonymous objection. I think those are sort of two different animals, and I hope they won't sort of be confused and intertwined. I don't recall from my years in the legislature a similar situation like this, but certainly one can describe this as a legislative veto that DNR has approved a grant of money to acquire land for conservation purposes, and that a committee of the legislature is vetoing it, as opposed to, similar to Joker, as opposed to the legislature opposing it. So it's the principle of, can a subunit of the legislature exercise a veto, and even can the legislature as a whole exercise it as a veto as opposed to as a law? And that gets back to where we started the conversation, how a bill becomes a law. The legislature can pass any bill it wants. It can pass a bill that says, we don't want to fund, you know, X conservation project. And then a governor can either sign it or veto it. That, I think, is what the governor is trying to get at.
Mordecai Lee is with us, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee, former member of the Wisconsin State Legislature, talking with him about Governor Evers' lawsuit against Republican lawmakers for what he alleges is a violation of the state constitution's rules on separation of powers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a reaction to this lawsuit? Are you following it closely? Do you think the state legislature is exceeding its constitutional authority? Join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Mordecai Lee, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee, former member of the Wisconsin State Legislature, looking at Governor Evers' lawsuit against Republican members of the legislature for what he says is a violation of separation of powers, pointing in this, at least in this particular lawsuit, to refusal by lawmakers to extend pay raises to UW system employees that have been approved previously in the budget. Also, some stewardship of programs being blocked by anonymous lawmakers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on those two particular issues? The wider question of constitutional authority, is the balance being tipped too far in favor of the legislature? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Mordecai, we have, as we've talked about, two specific examples here. Is it possible that a decision by the court, and we don't know what that would be, is it possible that a decision by the court would affect a lot more cases like this where legislative committees have more comparable authority to these cases?
I think the best way to answer it is to look at the precedent from when the U.S. Supreme Court made a decision about legislative vetoes in 1983. It was a decision about the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and it's known as the Chadha decision because Mr. Chadha was the one who was suing INS about his citizenship. But what the U.S. Supreme Court decided then was that the method by which the U.S. Congress cast a legislative veto against INS was unconstitutional because it only required one house of the U.S. Congress to exercise the veto, as opposed to what we're used to from high school civics, two houses of Congress making a joint decision. And so as a result of that decision, Congress gradually stopped inserting the option of legislative vetoes in bills that it was passing, in laws that it was passing. And it gradually fell out of disuse. I researched this when it came to a president having a power to reorganize the federal government, where the president had to submit a plan to Congress based on a law that Congress had passed. And then Congress had the power to veto the proposal, the plan, but only both houses of Congress would have to agree to the legislative veto. But I think, but based on the historical record, ever since the 1983 Chadha decision, the Congress never renewed a president's power to submit reorganization plans, because I think they realized that the Chadha decision also made their legislative veto power, even though it was both houses, probably suspect under the Constitution. And I think that's how the state Supreme Court is going to proceed.
Now, I'm looking back at the end of 2018 after Governor Evers won an election before he came to power. There's a lot of attention to some so-called lame duck laws passed by the Republican legislature and then outgoing Republican Governor Scott Walker. One of those gave the legislature the power to permanently block regulations written by the state's administrative agencies. Those are part of the executive branch. Are some of those decisions made in that brief window between the election day and inauguration day for Governor Evers, are those part of the story here where you had a governor willing to at least cede at least some authority to the legislature?
I think this is one of those cases where, unfortunately, we have to look at it through a partisan prism and note the hypocrisy and double standards that we're seeing from politicians on from both parties. So in the incident that you instance that you described, it was Republicans wanting to proactively prevent a Democratic governor from having certain powers. And so Democrats complained that this was just so unfair because they didn't do it to a Republican governor, and now they're doing it to a Democratic governor. So now the shoe is on the other foot, and Democrats, through this lawsuit, are hoping to regain some gubernatorial powers. And the Republican leaders of the state legislature are shocked at this effort at a power grab. And I think this is why we Wisconsinites are just so impatient with politicians, that instead of having a consistent point of view, they have a double standard. If it's good for my side, I'll support it. If it's bad for my side, I'll oppose it, even if those two things contradict each other.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hello, and hello, Mordecai. I used to serve with you on the Poli-Sci Committee years ago.
Oh, my God. Hi, Kay.
I'm back in Madison now after being in New York State and city for several years. I was a campaign aide to a future chief judge of the state of New York, and he taught me to pay attention to the establishment clauses. And the first one in the Constitution is establish justice. To my mind, if you don't have equal educations, you're not receiving equal justice. And the Wisconsin's governor's first designated priority in the Wisconsin Constitution is to ensure domestic tranquility. So if you have justice, you have tranquility. So I think it's domestic responsibility and constitutional responsibility to have equality, which means diversity in our universities. And I think the governor is doing his duty constitutionally.
Kay, thanks for the call. Let's go right to that last point. Mordecai, Kay thinks ultimately the governor is right to doing his duty, she says, to make this legal challenge to the state legislature.
Well, there's no doubt that based on the specifics of what the lawsuit is, in other words, Kay was talking about the blocking a pay raise for university employees, that one could make an argument that this leads to, let's say, inequitable higher education. Now, it's also possible that the counterargument would be, well, we're affecting all university employees, UW employees, and therefore we're dealing with all of that category of employees fairly. I'm not sure if that's where the lawsuit is going to go. I suspect that it's not going to go that far into the weeds of Kay's argument, but it's going to stop at the issue of the principle of legislative veto being constitutional or not.
Okay, thanks for that call. Mordecai, one other part of the story I want to get into. Governor saying, hey, this should go to the state Supreme Court. It doesn't have to work its way up the usual way through the lower courts and on up the state Supreme Court under new management after our last state Supreme Court election. What do you think of the move to get it straight to the top?
Well, again, it's an issue of where you stand depends on where you sit. In other words, when there was a conservative majority on the state Supreme Court, Republicans were always delighted when the Supreme Court would take original jurisdiction, the way you described it, Rob. In other words, that instead of the Supreme Court being the appellate court, that it would just, bam, take it right away, and the case wouldn't have to work its way up the chain of courts. Now there's a Democratic majority, a de facto Democratic majority on the Supreme Court. And so the shoe is on the other foot. And Dems are delighted by this, and Republicans are appalled by it. And it's again, I suppose one could try to strip away the partisanship and say, does the case deserve to be dealt with immediately, this week, this month, as opposed to, let's say, over the course of 6 months or a year or 2 years as it goes from trial level court to the Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court? And I think it just depends on how one judges any specific issue and its urgency in terms of taking it up right away at the Supreme Court.
I want to take our last minute, Mordecai, as I often do when I talk to you, to look back at a past historic example. Tommy Thompson, Republican governor of Wisconsin, long stretch of time with him in the governor's office, Democrats in charge of the legislature. It wasn't all hugs and kisses, but they seemed to function in a way that divided government doesn't in Wisconsin now. Am I right? Can we get back there if so?
Well, I know I'm going to sound like an old codger, but I definitely think that when I was in the legislature and there were Republican governors, there were Democratic governors. I was in the legislature from the mid-70s to 1989, and it always struck me as being all of us trying to be reasonable, and compromise was a way to solve problems. And now I think we've gotten to a situation where there's just this lockstep knee-jerk. If the Dems are for it, Republicans are against it. If the Republicans are for it, Dems are against it. And nobody's looking at the issues and the merits of the issue, let alone how can we compromise on this? How can each of us get half a loaf? And so I really regret it, because I like your example, Rob. Tommy Thompson believed in compromise, and that's why we remember him so fondly.
Mordecai, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Anytime. Thanks, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee, former member of the Wisconsin State Legislature. He talked to us about Governor Evers' lawsuit against Republican lawmakers. You can read more about that and follow its progress online at WPR.org. Our state capitol team will be watching that as it progresses, maybe straight to the state Supreme Court.